Good morning. Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Blake Murphy. She's Ailish Forfar. He's JD Bunkus. You are texting in 590-590. I keep answering some texts throughout this next half hour. I am just a little distracted by every time I make the mistake of following a Jacksonville Jaguars blog, and they occasionally tweet out links, as you would, and they're all just like one bad Urban Meyer thing after another, and I can't tell. Like, do you ever see so much news around the same thing you can't tell if it's updates you're seeing or just the same thing over and over again? That's where I'm at with that situation.
Yeah, not great.
Feels great. Yeah, awesome. We got any good texts?
We got so many texts.
No, I said, do we have any good texts?
Yeah, I have a lot of DMs still about
so desserts. Much dessert.
But yeah, we'll get back.
We'll get back to the dessert. We'll do a couple actual things. Adam from Guelph. Funny story. If you Google Zach Hyman, Google's description for him is Canadian author.
Yeah.
Not even like NHL player. Just says Canadian author. That was a good one. Here what? We go. You guys wanted to touch on this a little bit too. Ryan.
Where does it say that?
Like right under on the right hand side. See.
Yeah, but under the right-hand side, I see Zach Hyman is a Canadian professional ice hockey player. Oh, yeah, there. Canadian author. Hey.
Pretty fun, eh?
Yeah, that is
pretty
fun.
He is a Canadian author.
I like it when Google does the fun things, like when they do, like, who owns the Chicago Bears, and it shows up as Aaron Rodgers.
You know that they don't do that. Like,
no,
that's
they do.
That's somebody going into Wikipedia and changing it.
No, I'm saying that Google also does things like that with, like, what was the one with Daniel, or like, where it was, like, who is the magic man? And it was Pavel Datsyuk. Mm. And there was one for him, too, or for Daniel Alfredson. I can't remember. Yeah, see, when you Google who is the magic man, it comes up Pavel Datsyuk. See?
Oh, I see what you mean. Like,
yeah,
well, that's his nickname.
But, no, like, in Google, he just shows up right there. There's no like, it is like, yeah, nickname the Magic Man later, but it's like that was what comes
I see,
up.
I see.
What was the Alfredson one? Damn it.
Well, I type can't in Alfredson, maybe it'll show up.
No, but that's the whole thing is like you have to type in the special code thing.
Like in our podcast,
also,
the Win Leafs tickets.
Apparently, the Magic Man is a major antagonistic in the Cartoon Network series Adventure Time. Good to know. Yeah, I learned that just now from Who is God? That was it. It was Who is God?
God?
Yeah. Who's God?
Right now. What's it say?
It doesn't do it anymore. It's gone. But it used
He's
to be.
He's not God anymore.
Yeah, but it used to be Daniel Alfredson is what it would come up with in the search. Anyway.
My answer to that would always be like.
Who's God? Would your answer to that?
Well, no. I mean, like if you're going to produce a Google result or like an image of that, Alanis Morissette in Dogma.
Oh, yeah.
Is who I picture when like there's a.
Good call.
Theoretical God.
Really good call. I'm into that. I forgot what we were even talking about because I was rambling
Texts.
Away. Yeah, I know. Like, we have them. I just meant,
it was about
you?
Zach Hyman being a Canadian author.
Oh, right. Canadian author. That's
I love it.
Yeah.
Okay, so Ryan texts in, can we talk about how good that UFC card was, even in the prelims? And then also, Panthers versus Leafs in a 7-game series, who wins?
He asked both those questions?
He asked both. He's
so Ryan, really showing your range
Yeah,
there.
We love it, Ryan.
Really showing your range and also taking advantage of Ailish's kindness, letting two questions get in.
Yeah, I'll let it in.
Yeah, kind of a cheater move. Blake, what do you want to talk about the UFC?
Yeah, I thought it was. I mean, we mentioned it really briefly yesterday. Mm-hmm. I thought top to bottom, including the prelims and the early prelims, it was one of the best UFC cards I can remember. Really excellent fights, good storylines, exciting finishes, some. You know, kind of history altering outcomes in terms of, hey, you know, Oliveira has that big name win now. Poirier was a guy who, you know, Poirier came in as the challenger, as a favorite. And for Oliveira to sub him and continue that record of most subs and being dominant in that division, I thought was huge. Obviously, the Pena upset of Nunez is one of the biggest upsets of all time. And then, yeah, up and down the card. I mean, I'm not the hugest O'Malley fan. I think they book him against opponents where he's in a good position to get knockout victories, but he puts on fun fights. I thought the same thing with Shuey. He gets the early second round knockout, a bit of a disappointment from a betting perspective because the bet there was very clearly first round knockout, and he knocks him out like one punch into the second round.
I bet both. One was plus 400, one was plus 600, so I just laid it both times.
Yeah, you're covered either way. But yeah I thought top to bottom, fight quality and, you know, the importance of the fights and the stories going into and coming out of them, one of the best UFC cards I can remember.
Yeah, it was really good. It was really, obviously, it will always be remembered for Nunez more than anything. Like, mm-hmm. nothing will come close in terms of, like, Oliveira was a great win for him, but no, Nunez and is.
You said yesterday it was the top three upset in terms of betting of all time. Like, that's real hard to top. Only two other things have.
Well, here's the thing about the other two as well. I would say that GSP Sarah is a little bit more legitimate than the Ronda Rousey loss against Holm, because Holly Holm, like, is legit. And her beating Ronda Rousey should never have been that great of a betting discrepancy. Like, that was a screw up. And maybe
that was a, hey, we're all a little new to women's MMA.
Yeah.
And Rousey is the character and the face and the dominant force.
And so, all due respect to Matt Serra, as shocking as that was, the UFC was still a younger sport. And GSP was dominant and exciting, and that was definitely one of the greatest upsets of all time. There's no doubt about it. I think on the men's side, it is that. But if I was to say, what is the most shocking result of your lifetime in a fight, this is now the answer. Like, this is the answer for me. And what's crazy is that I watched yesterday anyways, Julianna Pena talking to Ariel Helwani months ago about how she thought that Nunez was ducking her, and that she felt as though she was a really good matchup and that she was going to do well, and that she sort of predicted this. And I know a lot of fighters do that. And so we look back on it and say, well, all fighters say they're going to win. But to make those direct callouts and then to have that prediction sort of play out exactly the way that she said it was
also
pretty interesting.
It's a bit of not even a heat check, because you're not hot. She was 2-2 in her last four fights. She didn't really have a good claim to a title shot other than Nunez has cleaned out the division and Kayla's not there yet. So... That was one of those things. And that's when I was coming into this, trying to figure out, you know, what was the upset potential? I didn't bet on Pena. I just kind of played the prop game on the, on the Nunez side. It was like, no, like, sure, you can get past losing to Shevchenko. I don't know. Like, she had been technical submission not that long ago. The win over McMahon was like a good submission, but not something that you're like, hey, you barely beat the bell subbing McMahon. You're going to sub Nunez. I think it's a monster upset.
I realized this over the weekend with the Max Lewis thing, is sports can become monotonous when you do this every day. It just happens. Sometimes it just feels like a business trip, you know, like you're like, okay, you know, we got to get this done. We got to watch this game. Like last night, you think I want to watch Raptors, Sacramento Kings? Like, hell no. That's like the most,
especially after Sunday's day of sports.
Oh my God. Like, okay. Yeah, no, you know what I'd rather watch? Anything else. It's like anything other than that game. Sacramento Kings. Like, Blake, my question for you out of that game was, do you think this is a G League team that is more disciplined than the Sacramento Kings? Cause I'm like, yeah, there might be. So,
yeah, I mean, ask De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah.
He just ripped his own guys to shreds after that one.
Awful game. But I love watching history, like something where you feel like, oh boy, this is like, there's real stakes here outside of what I gamble on a game. And Max Lewis, there was real stakes. Like, I was going to remember that. And so that UFC card, Blake, all those fights that you just mentioned, I agree, they were really exciting. And Oliveira kind of having his coming of age moment here, or his coming out party, where we say, oh, this guy's not just a flash. Like, this guy's a legitimate champion.
Yeah, it's a kingmaker fight for him.
It was. But watching Nunez lose is I'm going to remember exactly where I was and exactly the feel. I'll admit, Nunez's fights, once they start to go past round one, I start to be like looking at my phone, because I'm just assuming that she's going to turf someone. And then I didn't do that, and it ends up being this incredible upset where everyone's talking about the sport. And so, yeah, no, I found that to be incredible. I'm with you on the O'Malley thing, though. They've set him up for too many good fights, and now he needs to have a, he was calling out Dominic Cruz, saying Cruz is ducking him or whatever. I'm like, dude, I don't want to see you fight Dominic Cruz, all right? Like, I want to see you fight someone who is also a legit contender on the rise. So the O'Malley versus Scrubs thing, and not to say that Paiva is a scrub, he had a 3-win streak, but again, it's like, you saw the size difference between the two of them. The hand speed of O'Malley is really exciting, but they need to make him fight somebody good. What else is on the text line?
So the second part of that text from Ryan was Panthers versus Leafs in a 7-game series. Who wins?
I don't know.
That's, I mean, the Panthers also haven't won a playoff round since 1996, when they lost the Stanley Cup Finals. So
really?
Yeah, they haven't won a playoff round since then. Last year, they lost in the first round. 2016, they lost in the first round. 2012, they lost in the first round. Every other year, they've missed the playoffs. And then you go all the way back to 2000, where they lost in the first round. 1997, where they lost in the first round. And then 1996, they lost the Stanley Cup Final. Every other time, they've missed the playoffs. So, which is like, whoa, I didn't realize that. And they're just in a little bit of a slump too.
Because they had no fans to tell you about.
Yeah, nobody was even talking about it. It was like, wait, what?
There was no one to make a sound as to what was like, oh, the tortured Panthers. Like, what? Sorry. It is funny though, because I still think of them as like that. I think one of my earliest sports memories was the Panthers making it to a Stanley Cup final when I was just a like young kid and like remembering the Rats. And Van Beesbrook, and like the fact that they were an expansion team. A lot of people had at that time in the 90s gear that Ailish would go crazy for. Now
I always look
like,
for
oh my god, my Florida Panthers starter jacket that I had as a kid. You would lose your mind for it, Ailish. But everybody, it was almost like every kid whose parents were into sports had some variation of like a Sharks t-shirt or a Panthers jacket.
So cool.
Or like, you know,
I had a Colorado Avalanche starter jacket.
Yeah, see, that's like all those teams, the ones that were new in the NHL, Charlotte Hornets was always a big one too.
Oh, yeah.
But those were popping.
I think the Leafs would, answer Ryan's question, I think they would be able to beat them. Even though Panthers are first in the Atlantic right now, I can't wait for them to play them, which is not to like March or something ridiculous. So, we'll circle back to that.
They got the 3-game sprint right at the end, 3 games in a month.
I just actually need to see them play each other, right?
Wouldn't that be nice?
Like, I'd like to see how they actually match up with one another. It's really hard to be like the Leafs when it's literally been 2 years since they've played.
Let's play one game and then we'll talk.
Yeah, I need to see it. So, yeah, as of right now, it's just like, sure, I'll say Leafs because this is where I work.
Okay, so Jeff from Oakville. Does Marner and Tavares deserve more respect than being put on the fourth line of Team Canada?
I mean, Marner, we just got to see if he's going to be healthy in time.
But Tavares, earlier in the season, we talked about it. Like, I don't think he was even, he was on the bubble, but I think he's earned himself back into the conversation.
I don't think it's a respect thing. It's just like,
there's lots of good players.
Yeah, there are a lot of good players.
Which is a good thing if you're a Team Canada fan.
I was just going to say, this is Team Canada. First of all, I haven't seen one person pick Marner for the fourth line of Team Canada.
Well, I was going to say, if you have him on there, you don't want to use him that way. But he is a really good checking forward as well. So but maybe you do.
But for the most part, I've actually seen Marner with McDavid. Those two guys wanted to be together, and Marner like had big plans to be like, that's his MO. He wants to be with him. And if you're McDavid, you're thinking, hey, that'd be cool to have a setup guy. Like, I have not seen a projection of that. So where you're getting that from, I'm not really sure. Cause I also pay pretty close attention to these things. I've never seen that.
Yeah. Tavares would make more sense to me.
Well, even just think about this though. It's like, Marchand, Crosby, Bergeron is going to be a line. Like, that's just, that's already done. Mm-hmm. That's set in stone if they go. And then you have, if Braden Point is healthy, that he's going to be there. Huberto, same thing. Mark Stone, Nathan MacKinnon, Connor McDavid. Like, where are you putting Tavares on this list ahead of any of those guys? In terms of, so, like, if Tavares is on the fourth line, he's there with, like, Steven Stamkos and Mark Scheifele and, You know, like, disrespect.
Yeah.
Like, no, what are you talking about? Just like, relax. If you make Team Canada, there's no disrespect. You just made the best hockey team on the planet Earth that they can assemble. So,
like, is Ryan O'Reilly complaining about fourth line there? I don't think so.
No.
Right?
So, and also, like, Tavares is not international ice. I don't think that you're wanting him to be in a prominent role. Like, again, who is he going to play over in the top six? Like, do you want him playing over McDavid or Crosby? So, like, that's the question. So, over MacKinnon? No, he's not getting disrespected. And Marner, if he's on the team, I think he is up the lineup playing with one of those top groups. And if he isn't, like, again, okay, so they said Mark Stone and is going to play a heavy view. Hard to be angry.
Yeah, especially coming off injury.
Yeah. What's next?
Mark from Oshawa. Strawberry rhubarb cheesecake made by me. Oof. Also, keep Mrazek. Don't trade for cap space as suggested by so many clowns in Leafs Nation. What happens if Campbell gets hurt? I completely agree. I don't think that trading for Mrazek for cap space by itself is the right call, especially with Campbell not really being set as a full-time for the rest of the season. When you look at Joe Wall was our backup, even though he had a couple good showings, I think you need Mrazek as a little bit of a cushion if you're going to make a playoff push and don't know how your goaltender is going to fare down the line.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, I haven't heard it framed at least of trading Mrazek for cap space, like, certainly,
no, but I get it.
Certainly not
like
in season.
No, I get that.
It's more you trade Mrazek in one move to clear the space to make another move.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a a sequential, hey, Mrazek for maybe a defenseman here. Mm-hmm. And to get the space for that, you need to unload Mrazek. I still wouldn't trade Mrazek. I don't like that. I think if it's a thing, it's an offseason thing once you see more of Campbell and have him locked up. But yeah, I'm just to clarify that I don't think anyone's like, well, you could use the 3.8 in space. It's more to open up room for a subsequent move.
What was this guy's name again?
Mark from Oshawa.
Yeah, I think what Mark is implying is trade him for cap space. Like, yeah, no, obviously the Leafs are going to use that on other things. Mm-hmm. So I think
I just
like,
want to clarify.
That we're taking it to the letter of the law. I think what he actually means is, hey, trade him for a lesser goalie that comes at a lower cap number.
Or to use Wall.
Or just in general that this is the area where you should try and save some money, as it has been suggested by many people. Like the idea of, hey, could you trade Mrazek and get a cheaper backup goaltender if you're going to play Jack more, or Jack is going to be this guy. I do think that happens in the offseason if they re-sign Jack. Mm-hmm. I do. I think that that is what the plan was going to be. But this year, I agree with Mark, unless I'm presented with a pretty palatable option, and I don't really know who the goaltender is that's making like $1 million plus less than Mrazek that I'm feeling comfortable doing, or why that makes sense for the other team, or what the trade is for Toronto. Like,
and then on top of that, what is the subsequent move that necessitates the Mrazek flip? And then you're talking about like, okay, well, you also got to tell me then who's the second pair defenseman that's coming back as part of this thing. So again, I'm with Mark that, you know, that's not the move right now. More of an off-season thing. But yeah, I just wanted to clarify in case anyone wasn't clear.
No, the part of it that's tough, though, and where I go, okay, I agree. Because I want to have Mrazek back there. We've already been, I said I'm on high alert already for Jack Campbell wearing down. And I think if you're Jack Campbell, you want to prove that you can stay healthy for this entire season. And that doesn't mean playing, you know, 55-plus games. They signed Mrazek for a reason. They don't believe, shouldn't say they don't believe, but they have questions about Campbell staying healthy for an entire season. Plus, we also look at goalies the way that I think we look at running backs. I've made this comparison now for years that this was always coming. Like, you really shouldn't pay one unless they're a superstar, but also if you work them into the ground, they're going to have, like, I'm sorry, but even think about Derrick Henry this year, right? Like, he stayed healthy for a really long time, and it's not, you know, correlation is causation or whatever the hell, but... Yeah, at least have to think about it. And I don't want to see Jack Campbell play too many games. Again, playoffs matter for this team. So it might mean a lot for Jack to be healthy for or to play a lot of games in the regular season. To me, it doesn't matter. Be at your best come playoff time. It's hard to picture Mrazek leaving. But then again, if you don't move that money, I don't know where you're making the biggest difference if you're trying to add an actual contract. Like, so you move off of Hall, let's say, that every Leaf fan loves it. Okay, well, you're saving like $1 million off of the guy that you're bringing up from the Marlies. Okay, so what, you're moving Richie? Well, you still need bodies. And again, replacing Richie, you're only saving like $1 million. So you move both of those guys and you put in replacement players. You're talking about like 1 point something extra that you have in salary for a team that's already like very cash strapped. So I have a tough time understanding where Toronto can find a contract they're going to move off of in order to bring in something that I think we all agree is a need on the blue line. That's it. That's why I asked Ian Tulloch when he was on, Ailish, you were off on that show day on Friday, give me a cheap defenseman that might be available. And he looked around and went, there isn't really any.
Yeah.
And if there was one, you can better believe the price would be astronomical. Yeah. And
He came up with Mark Pizik.
Yeah, which is like, I don't want that.
Who?
Yeah, Sabres. What's next?
Drew from Peterborough. Two things. The dessert to go to is definitely pecan pie. End of story. Ooh, yeah, I like it, really Drew. Good. That's good.
I like that too. Pecan pie is very, very good. Ooh. But I still have like strawberry rhubarb pie ahead of it. But pecan's on the list of elite.
Yeah, it's elite.
Yeah.
And then he also had some sports analysis. I would like to look at what the over is for Harden on points. I might be a homer, but the whistle has been against all the young Raptors all year. And I could see him getting back to his old tricks and getting the benefit of the doubt tonight.
All right. Well, first of all,
it's old tricks. I love the way you phrase that.
The over under on Harden points is 21.5.
Really? That's kind of low. Actually.
Yeah, I thought it was much lower.
It is kind of low.
I was going to guess 24.5.
He's only averaging 20.8 now because he's playing with Kevin Durant. Okay. They don't need to rely on that a lot. As for the Raptors' young players getting the wrong side of the whistle, the whole book on this defense is that they play a hyper aggressive style designed to make you uncomfortable and force a lot of turnovers. Mm-hmm. You're going to foul a lot with that. That's the way it is. That is the way it's been under Nick Nurse. It's not a Toronto thing. And sure, the odd call, a guy gets rooked or whatever. But you play an incredibly aggressive style, you're going to rack up some fouls.
Yeah. There is nothing that bothers me more than that. Like the whole Toronto fans thinking that the Toronto is the worst city when it comes to fouls, and that in some way that they don't get respect from officials. All that stuff is like, it's painful. It's painful, painful, painful.
I mean, look, there is a huge free throw disparity, but they shoot at the rim very infrequently as an offense.
I know.
And they are very, very aggressive and handsy on defense because they don't have rim protection.
Yeah. I think that it gets very, very oversimplified a lot of times in the way that they are covered. And that it's like, it's not your fault, fans, sometimes, you know? What's next?
A lot of texts about Nanaimo bars.
I got some DMs about Nanaimo bars. I got to tell you, I find them to be disgusting.
Disgusting?
Yeah, disgusting.
Wow. I don't want one. That is outrageous.
Yeah, Nanaimo bar is a, I'll have a bite of that. I don't want anything
else. Okay, so part of this text from Ryan from Guelph is that you can't eat too many or you feel sick. I agree with that. They're very rich. Like, you have one and you're like, well, that was almost too much. Like, you need a baby bite.
I want one bite.
But then my girl, Meredith from EG, she texts back and she said, okay, well, what they must be the most Canadian dessert. That over butter tart, I'm open to debate. But then I said beaver tails. And she said, ooh, now we have a debate.
Yeah, except for the only thing with beaver tails is it's so specialized. Like, you don't go to somebody's house and they're like, do you want a beaver tail?
You have to go to that little stand down there by the waterfront or go to Ottawa.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Like on the Rideau Canal is where you're eating a beaver tail.
Yeah, and here's my guess. In America, they have things that are beaver tails. They're just not called beaver tails.
You know, they don't have beavers in America.
No, I think that they're just probably called a just variety like they don't have nickels. Of different things. Yeah, I forgot about that.
No nickels in America.
Never forget, Blake once said that there's no nickels in America, but Ailish and I trust Blake so much that we just immediately believed it. We were like, wow. And I was just in America and had nickels. So
I mean, look, Ailish was at the big nickel on the weekend.
I saw it.
What country were you in?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. No, it's hard to decide. I would say both of them are very Canadian desserts. Mm-hmm. Like, they're very much like your grandmother gives you one of those two things. Like, she has those in the fridge.
Yeah. She's got them loaded up when you visit.
There's a Nanaimo bar or a butter tart somewhere in your grandmother's house. You're going to get one. So, yes, I think of them as like a very traditional dessert. I think that butter tart is by far better to me. Like I don't think it's close. Nanaimo bar, you just said it. It's too rich. There's just the taste, texture, all of the thing with Nanaimo bar, none of it hits with me. I guess it does with some people.
This one made me laugh out loud during break. I got to read it. Ice cream from Switzerland made with milks from the Alpine cows. I love it. Those are for our listeners that remember the Alpine cow comment last week.
9% milk cows.
Yeah.
Those are those special cows. But I went home this last weekend. I sent you guys a photo of my parents' fridge. No response. There was...
Did
not respond to the text about
the
milk.
Ha 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 ha.
No chance.
Do you really want me to pull up? Like,
I'm gonna go look.
God,
later.
I have a succession meme
but
too again.
They had the 3% homogenized milk in the fridge when I went to visit them, and I was like, guys, you know this is disgusting, right? Everybody thinks that I was raised poorly because I was drinking this.
Well, not raised poorly, just raised with intent.
Yeah.
They wanted to turn you into a hockey player.
A thick blue liner.
Maybe they wanted to turn you into
a thick boy.
A pro wrestler.
Pro wrestler.
Speaking of, it's time. Do you have more before we...
No, get it.
It's time to give away a pair of tickets to the WWE Holiday Tour on December 29th at Coca-Cola Coliseum. Our phone lines are now open. Be the fifth caller right now at 416-870-0590. 1-888-666-0590 or *590. Hit any of those numbers to win. We'll be giving away tickets every day this week, so stay tuned if you miss out today. And a reminder that Sportsnet now is Canada's official home for all things WWE. Live stream Monday Night Raw, Friday Night SmackDown, and pay-per-view events. Start streaming today with plans as low as $14.99. 416-870-0590 for a free pair of tickets to the WWE Holiday Tour on December 29th at Coca-Cola Coliseum. That's a little tease for you. Also a little tease, Kyrie Irving posting that maybe he's on his way back. We're going to ask Brian Windhorst of ESPN about that and a bunch more after the break. It's the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan. Hey, Leafs fans, we're giving you the chance to win tickets to the Maple Leafs Penguins game on December 29th. Today's code word is Crosby. Text Crosby to 590-590 for your chance to win.
Vic always has usually an angle as to why he plays something, and not today. This is just a good beat. Okay. I thought you were trying to take a shot at me for being the way that I am in some way, and I don't know. All right, fine. So we're cool? All right, good to know.
I do feel like Kyrie would post this as an Instagram caption, though.
Well, Kyrie, about to... I can't wait to hear the Kyrie spin zone when he comes back. It's the Fan Morning Show. J.D. Bunkus, Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Reported yesterday that there's, quote, optimism for a Kyrie Irving return from Shams Charania. Let's see if our next guest, NBA insider Brian Windhorst, host of the Hoop Collective podcast and host with ESPN, is hearing the same. Brian, good morning. How's it going, man?
Okay, how are you?
I'm doing well. Where are you at with the Kyrie stuff right now? Like his rumored potential return or this renewed optimism within the Nets organization that they're going to get him this season. What is the shape of that? Like, is that a, and that's me watching Succession too much when I say, what is the shape of that? What does that look like to you right now? Is that a player who's still playing part-time? Does he get the vaccination and does he spin it in some weird Kyrie way where he's like, oh, I was never anti-vax or whatever? Like, what are you hearing right now with regards to Kyrie Irving?
Guys, my viewpoint of Kyrie Irving contains on the rectangle of the basketball court. Outside the basketball court, if you're going to try to make sense of Kyrie Irving, you're going to have a real long day. It's not a linear situation.
Yeah.
I will tell you that certainly there are people who believe that there's a value in playing Kyrie only in road games. Because not only would it help them in certain situations, but also would potentially help his trade value. But when you look at the NBA right now and the COVID that is going through the league, it looks like it's probably only going to get worse. We have a Nets player, Paul Millsap, in health and safety protocols right now. In 2 weeks or a little bit less, the restrictions in New York about what is considered fully vaccinated is going to increase. By the end of the month in the NBA, players who are not boosted are not going to be considered vaccinated. You look at that dashboard and tell me optimism, I say good luck to you.
Yeah, and we're feeling it here too. Obviously, the Raptors have had a little bit of a situation on their own with Masai Ujiri and a couple other players and broadcasters entering isolation out of an abundance of caution. And now the Raptors aren't playing the Bulls on Thursday anymore because the Bulls have infinite players in health and safety protocols. You mentioned Kyrie getting back on the court and what that could do for his trade value. I think, you know, around the league, everyone is going to know what Kyrie Irving is as a basketball player. But like you said, it's off the court where there's question marks. I guess my question to you, my follow up to you would be, what teams are still out there who, you know, we've seen Kyrie on a few different spots now. Who out there is like, yeah, you know what? We're ready to go this route with Kyrie too. We'll give it another shot. I look, you know, across town at the Knicks maybe or something like that. But do you feel like there would be a market for Kyrie Irving at this point?
I don't know if you're aware of this, but the Knicks play in New York. They'd have the same problem.
No, I know, but they're also Knicks.
I know. It's a difficult situation to frame because, like, if you ask the question, do you want to trade for Kyrie Irving? That's a very simple question. And you'd say, oh, yes, let me give you the 11 teams here and let me give you the 11 trades. But this thing has jagged angles all over it. Giant number one, Kyrie can be a free agent after this season. Now, that he'd opt out of a contract in this situation seems insane to me. But again, once Kyrie steps off that court, the linear thinking kind of fades into nothing. So if you're going to trade for Kyrie Irving, and he might walk on you, and the situation might change in like what can play and what not, and who can play. Like, you know, maybe if you're in a team in a city that doesn't have vaccination restrictions today, what happens in February? Maybe you do. So, yeah, I'll make a trade offer for Kyrie Irving. Here is a load of junk. Have I shown interest in Kyrie Irving? Am I interested in trading for him? Yes, I can say that. I can knock that check mark. But the concept of the Nets trading Kyrie Irving, superstar, all-star, top 20 NBA talent for legitimate return that helps them, not on the board right now. So, but again, like, if you put me on the witness stand and say Kyrie Irving be traded, I would have to say yes. But be an answer that you're truly looking for.
See, so basically, are all we talking about here, like, if we're having this entire Kyrie conversation, if we're talking like renewed optimism, is this just essentially the sense of renewed optimism for Kyrie is that he's no longer threatening to retire if he's traded, that he wants to play ball now so much that he's like, hey, it's not working out here. They're not changing the state laws. You just said it. They're going to add another vaccination requirement. I got to play somewhere else. I want to play. This is going to be a trade. I need to go out. I need to play a couple of road games, show that I'm healthy, show that I'm willing. And then some team, I don't know, I'm just like throwing it out there, but that has different state laws is where Kyrie's going to play if they can give the Nets any sort of win now package.
Just think about how complicated that question was.
Yeah, I know. It was not great. I don't know if I did a good job either.
I'm just saying, like, I like, you know, when I say I don't know, it's not because it's because this situation is so bleeped that how are you supposed to figure it out? And again, I'll just point out, and by the way, I've been here on Kyrie for years. Once he steps off that court, linear thinking and linear thinking largely evaporate.
Yeah.
So you making linear assumptions, you're going to be let down more often than not, in my opinion.
I think it's a reasonable opinion. What about the Pacers? Like, I keep thinking, like, I don't know what their laws are, but they, because like State by State, I'm not really paying attention to this thing, but like they've got all these guys on the table, and I'm thinking, if you're them, how far does something like a Sabonis or a Miles Turner, or, you know, they're not going back to the Caris LeVert well, obviously, but how do they factor into all of this with those pieces? Because it seems like basically anybody on the Pacers is available.
Yeah, I'm just not sure that that's true. So one of the most incredible stats in the NBA, in fact, I'll even pose it to you as a trivia question, and I don't expect you to get it, just so you know. When was the last time the Indiana Pacers drafted inside the top 10?
Was it Paul George? No, he was later, right?
No, he was inside the top 10.
Inside the top 10? God, I don't know where.
Don't spend too long. Ready for this?
Yeah.
1989.
Oof.
Now, what does that mean? That means that the Pacers are not a believer in rebuilding. They have always tried to, maintain competitive. And there's number of reasons for that. One is just the nature of the ownership, which has not changed. Another is that while it's a basketball crazy state, the support for the Pacers is soft, and they're worried about a 2 or 3 year rebuild wrecking their attendance. They have never been an organization that has ever said, "Yep, we're blowing it up. We're trading all of our players, and we're just gonna sink down to the bottom." Hence, why they haven't drafted in the top 10. In 20-some years, 30 years, whatever it is. So when I hear they're going to blow it up, enormous red lights go on and say, that is not the Pacers organization that I know. Do I think they're interested in making a trade because this current mix is not delivering? Yes, I do. Even though the Pacers typically don't make mid-season trades, they did make a mid-season trade last year for Caris LeVert. I do believe that they're interested in moving one or so of these players, but it is not a, blow it up, unless it's a huge shift in the way they do things, in business. So I do think an interesting conversation is, if you're going to trade a player, which player do you trade? Because all of those guys that they have, well, first off, you can't trade Malcolm Brogdon. He signed a contract extension at the beginning of the year, and he's not eligible to be traded. So you're really looking at Miles Turner, who is an interesting player, a great shot blocker, and a guy who can stretch the floor, and has 1 year left on his contract. Caris LeVert, who is recovering from an awful sickness last year and is not having a great year this year, but you have to calculate that in. And then Sabonis, who's a two-time All-Star, their best player. All three of those guys have value, and I think there are markets where it makes sense, and I think they're going through that right now. But I would be stunned if they trade two or three of them. Mm.
So if we touch on another player with some trade rumors circling Ben Simmons, and how many teams do you think are in the mix now, and who are you keeping the closest eye on?
I see no significant action there.
Hmm.
You know, I think that there is a because trade season begins, so to speak. What day is the 15th? Is that tomorrow?
Yeah.
The 15th is when all players, most players, I should say, can be traded. About a third of the league that signed new contracts last summer weren't eligible to be traded until tomorrow, and so the field of traded players opens. Plus, it's like the 33% point of the season where teams have evaluated themselves. So December 15th classically is a date when trade season, quote-unquote, starts. And because of that, over the last 3 or 5 days, calls in the league have increased dramatically. People in my position start to hear things about teams, different teams wanting to do different things. Teams are sort of showing their hands a little bit to each other. So you see an increase in trade activity and trade rumors at this time. But for Ben Simmons, it's not like there was like 4 all-star players that weren't available last week that are now available this week that the Sixers are excited about. I don't think their menu of options has really changed. In my mind, the more likely thing that's going to happen here is that ownership in Philadelphia is going to say, we are paying a huge sum of money for this roster that is 500. And part of the reason it's 500, I guess maybe they're 2 games over, is because we've got this weight around our ankle in Ben Simmons, and can we do something so we don't have a lost season here? Which is the exact opposite of what Daryl Morey is projecting. You know, Daryl goes on the radio and says, I'll wait 4 years. Well, let me just be honest with you about Daryl. He's a very smart guy. When he says something in public, he has a reason for doing it. And he has no problem misleading people with what he says in public. It has happened dozens of times in his career. So when he says something, it looks, you know, I'm instantaneously skeptical of it. So when he says, I'll wait 4 years, it makes me wonder if he actually is going to be under pressure to make a deal sooner. Because, again, if I'm the ownership, I'm saying, why are we losing a year here? Let's make the best deal that we can. We'll see what happens between now and February.
So 76ers uncertainty because of what Daryl Morey is saying. Here in Toronto, it's generally uncertainty because of what the front office doesn't say. The Raptors are kind of right in that in-between of, hey, they're in a play-in spot, but, you know, their path to upsetting someone in the first round is a little dicey. It's been pretty quiet here in terms of what direction they might take the rest of the season. Obviously, last year is a template for one direction, but this franchise also values, you know, getting playoff experience for the young guys and things like that. Is there a sense around the league as chatter picks up about when or if the Raptors might pick a direction to, you know, add to this and make a run to the playoffs, or bow out of this and maybe make some of their pieces available?
The Raptors hit an absolute grand slam home run last year, and I'm not sure that everybody in Toronto who is so used to great success understands it. Maybe they do. But, you know, Siakam was hurt, and they were obviously struggling as a team. And so they downshifted and got into a position where they could get lucky in the lottery. And they, through the grace of good fortune, jumped up in the lottery in a year where the number 4 pick, they could get a player. And then they went through their – now, that was the incredible good fortune. Then they went through their processes, and when everybody thought they were going to take Jalen Suggs, and they said, no, we really like what this Scotty Barnes kid is. And they, I mean, it wasn't a giant risk, but it was surprising to people. And it was a great pick. And getting into that spot and getting Barnes, really just 1 year into changing the mindset of the organization, is enormous. There are teams that are in the lottery 4, 5, 6 years and don't get a player like Scotty Barnes. He is a potential foundational cornerstone of a contender. And so if I am the Raptors, I am absolutely over the moon with what they've been able to accomplish as a team in just this short period as they've retrofitted, said goodbye to Kawhi and then goodbye to Kyle Lowry. So now the difficult part, of course, is getting another of those types of players, because you really do need two in addition to hopefully that you can develop Barnes into that player. So they are in the middle ground where they're not going to really it's going to be difficult for them to make decisions because they still want to be competitive. They're not like the Oklahoma City Thunder. They can beat any team on any night. But every decision that they have going forward is going to be based on Barnes. And so if they have an opportunity at the trade deadline to add a piece, it should not be let's rent a player so that we can get two extra wins to get into 10th place. It should be how would this player that we trade for potentially fit next to Barnes in the next 3 to 5 years? And that's the way, you know, they've been shrewd with their decision making. I know that on certain nights when they don't have the same talent that they've had really for the last 5 or 6 years and they get beat, that it can be frustrating. But I think the Raptors have jumped forward in pivoting to another era by the events that have taken place since the middle of last season.
Before we let you go, I just want to ask about Steph breaking the three-point record, most likely tomorrow at MSG. How special will that be, and especially with where it's going to be taking place?
You know, it's really, really special to Steph.
Mm-hmm.
As he has talked over the last week about this, he's kind of shown his cards that this is something he's been eyeing for a really long time, and it matters a lot to him. He almost said it was more important than a championship, but he was saying that you compete for a championship every year, so you know you have multiple opportunities. This is something you do once in a lifetime, and so what has taken me especially is how important it is to him, and something that he's wanted, and most of us have known for years that Steph Curry is not only the greatest three-point shooter ever, but he's the greatest shooter ever. And we didn't need three extra three-pointers that he's going to need tonight in New York for that to be true. But it obviously is very important to him. And as an extreme compliment, you know, a week ago he said he needed 16 three-pointers in a game, and he didn't rule out that he could do it. And instantaneously, sportsbooks put up the line, and LeBron James even talked about how he was watching because he thought it was possible too. You know, it would have been like three more than the all-time record. I mean, the concept that he said, I'm going to have a Wilt Chamberlain-esque performance tomorrow, and people didn't disbelieve that it was possible, is an incredible compliment to him. And so it's going to be a great moment for him. New York is a special place for NBA players. They love playing in the Garden. One of the biggest moments of Steph's career was he had like a 57-point game in the Garden early in his career. It kind of vaulted him into a new place. And so doing it there, I think, would be special. If somehow he has a bad night and it would happen in Toronto, where he obviously has background, I think it would be special as well.
Brian, as always, we really appreciate your insight and your perspective, man. Thanks so much for making time today.
Thanks a lot. Take care. Bye-bye. You
too. Brian Windhorst, ESPN NBA insider and host, and of course, the Hoop Collective podcast. That Steph thing is kind of fascinating. I now, like, just as he said it, I sort of thought about it and went, you know, it isn't, of course, Steph Curry would rather have a championship, but guess what? He's already got one. And him getting this record and kind of getting that acknowledgement of this and having this be a moment at MSG, I don't know. Maybe it's because it's a weird one because we've taken it for granted so long, right? Mm-hmm. Basically, since Steph Curry's, third year in the NBA, we were like, oh, that guy's going to shatter the three-point record. It's only a matter of time. I was getting triggered and getting in arguments with friends about how when people would be like, he's already the greatest three-point shooter of all time. I was like, no, he's not. It's still Ray Allen, man. He hit that shot. You didn't see the heat. Like, that was me crying about it, knowing that was inevitability. But it's like, yeah, we're acknowledging something that we've known essentially his entire career, that this guy is the greatest three-point shooter of all time. And we've always gone over the like magnitude of it, where like the degree in which he's smashing this record is absurd. Like, it's truly absurd. Part of it is the way that the NBA has changed, but the NBA also changed because of this player. Like, they go hand in hand. The NBA shoots more threes because Steph Curry shot more threes, and because Steph Curry's greatness, mm-hmm. how the teams emulated it. Like, he is...
He changed the geometry of basketball.
Exactly. I think that there is a very strong case that Steph Curry is a more influential player than LeBron James, which is nuts.
Well, the thing is like, look, the idea that kids or other people can emulate Steph more easily is ridiculous. Like,
no.
His dad was a lights out shooter. His brother's a lights out shooter. Like, mm-hmm. there is a preternatural shooting ability there on top of all the hard work and everything. Mm-hmm. But the Steph story is maybe a little bit more accessible than LeBron James, who is so physically dominant that I think Steph feels a little more in reach. And hey, I can't bully to the rim like LeBron James, but maybe I can become a good three-point shooter. It's silly. Steph Curry is, by an order of magnitude, the best shooter ever. But I think that's where that element comes in.
But no, but that tonight, it's just going to... Like, I guess I didn't really have this on the sporting radar for me tonight. Like, I did, but I didn't. This is something where I wasn't going to watch it live. I was just sort of going to let it happen and be like, ah, well, you know, I see it on the highlight show. I'll see it on Sportsnet Central tomorrow. I'll see it on Twitter. Like, they'll be nice. And now, after listening to Brian and, you know, Ailish, you asking that question, I'm sort of like, I kind of have to watch this live. I kind of have to have this game on a second screen. I got to see how he hits it, how he does it.
A fourth screen. Because you got Leafs, Raptors, 905.
Yeah. No, I was like, what's the fourth? 905.
Well, I realized I said tomorrow, but I meant tonight, but we would talk about it tomorrow.
No. Yeah, okay. You wrote it down. I didn't even, you know, you just did the thing.
Yeah, I was like, wait,
no,
the
you
game
pointed
is
out
tonight.
Your old mistake that no one noticed except
I'm sure
you.
Someone was going to tweet in, this girl doesn't know anything about the schedule.
Oh, about the schedule. You got the schedule maker.
He doesn't have it memorized
there?
Every sport.
Where's the schedule maker? So, yeah, I think that's very, very special. Last thing before we go, though, I think the Knicks should trade for Ben Simmons. I really do. Oh,
I thought you were going to go for they should trade for Kyrie.
No, the Knicks should trade for Ben Simmons. The Knicks were always frauds last year, and everybody knew it, but nobody wanted to say it because it was so fun, and Bing Bong is so fun, and we got that, right? Bing Bong, like, it's so great, and Trae Young and all those things that happened because, like, people want the Knicks. It's weird to get a guy who is a potentially soft player in New York. I don't know how that part of it equates, but... I was trying to ask you, Blake, like how, when these, you know, trade protections or trade things come undone, because if I'm the Sixers, would you do something where they come to you, the Knicks, and say, hey, we'll give you RJ Barrett and Evan Fournier. Give us Ben Simmons. Are you starting to consider that?
Yeah, I probably want a little bit more.
Yeah, you probably do. Because
I really like RJ, but...
you're the only one. Other than people like you and Grange and
Fournier is
RJ's
good,
dad,
but I don't know that Fournier deal is going to age super well, and you're already like a deep tax team as the 76ers.
But he fits on that team.
He does. He sure does. Like, you know, maybe a little redundant with Danny Green and Seth Curry.
Yeah.
But he's, I mean, look,
Evan more Fournier, shooting around Joel.
Evan Fournier is a guy that every good team should want if the price is right. And RJ is obviously a good
buy low.
Is a good prospect equity for a guy like Simmons. I still think they ask for picks back too.
They do, but. But are we talking?
Yeah, I mean, look, at this point...
Who hangs up the phone?
If you're the 76ers, you should be talking to anyone. Yes. Because you are squandering yet another MVP-caliber year of Joel Embiid's prime.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You're running... Well, you may not be running out of time, but we don't know how long that Joel Embiid window is going to be open, and I would be acting now.
Simmons for Bing Bonga. What do you think?
Oh, yeah.
Bing Bong!
There you go. I mean, it works. It just works on a whole lot of levels.
Last thing. Do you think that they'll play the bing bong when Steph hits his record-breaking three tonight?
No.
They should. It'd be fun.
Do you know how harsh that would be to their fans? Mm-hmm. They're like,
hey, they know it's going to happen.
Guess what Knicks fans know? They passed on Steph Curry.
Yeah.
No, this is not a good night for Knicks fans, okay? This is a
Steph against the Knicks with the record online. Leafs at Oilers at 9, Raps at Nets at 7:30 on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We'll be back to talk to you tomorrow morning. It's The Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.